Dr. Oles Real One. Dr. Oles, could you give us some of your personal particulars, such as your date and place of birth, your education?
I was born in Singapore on 2nd April 1921. I was the 12th to be born in a family of 12. My father was a building contractor, and my mother, a Miss Clark, was the sister of Dr. Noel Clark, Dr. Farley Clark, Mr. Conrad Clark, who I think are all famous, well-known Singapore residents. I was born in St. Michael's Road in a very large attap house, and my first school was Raffles Girls' School, where I attended primary class. From there, I went to St. Andrew's School, and because St. Andrew's did not offer science in their curriculum, my father decided that I should continue and finish off my secondary education at Raffles Institution. And I went to Raffles Institution, starting off there in what was then Form 7, and did my junior Cambridge and senior Cambridge, which I did twice because I was young and because my first year results weren't that very good. And I did 1 year at the Queen's Scholarship class. I joined the King Edward VII College of Medicine in 1938, I think, as a dental student. I selected dentistry as first choice because this was a profession that was new to Singapore, and it was a suggestion from my eldest brother, Dr. R.C. Oles, who was then a police doctor, and later he was the doctor in the municipality. You might want to know my other brothers. Another brother of mine was the late Sir George Oles, first speaker of parliament in Singapore. Then I had a brother, Dr. S.L. Oles. Another brother of mine, Dr. Harry F. Oles, who unfortunately was killed in a car crash when he was only 24, after just having graduated as a lawyer in London. The firstborn in the family was also a boy, but he died as an infant. I have six sisters, all of them still alive, one of whom is in Singapore, Miss Nolene Oles, who was the principal of Raffles Girls' School for a number of years. The other sisters of mine all live in Britain. Whilst at the King Edward VII College of Medicine, I continued with my course in dentistry. Shakily in the beginning, but pretty successfully in the following years, until, of course, war disrupted my studies.
As a student in the College of Medicine, did you have any news of anti-Japanese activities that were going on in Singapore at that time?
Yes, of course, there were rumors, and there was also there was cases in the newspapers. There was, for example, the Shinozaki case, I remember. There was a Eurasian lady, I don't remember her name, who was involved, and I think she was imprisoned for fifth column activities. There was talk that the Japanese who ran fishing ponds in Pungol and elsewhere were in fact fifth columnists gaining information for Japan, photographers, barbers. And this is, well, of course, this is what we heard, but we never took these things too seriously because at that time we never ever for a moment thought that Japan posed a threat or any enemy posed a threat. We thought that the British were invincible, Singapore was very safe, and I mean nothing could happen to us.
Did you know about the anti-Japanese goods boycott that was going on in Singapore?
I can't recall that, actually.
Besides those rumors that you heard about the Japanese intelligence, did you know any Japanese in Singapore personally?
No, I did not know any personally, other than my dentist. And I didn't know him except that when I sat in his dentist chair. No, I didn't know anybody else. And of course, the people who had these 10-cent stores along Middle Road, I mean, those are the only people. Ichigoya. But outside of that, I did not know any of them.
What were your impressions of these 10-cent stores? Did you visit them?
Oh, yes. As a child, I used to go there, and I used to love buying toys from them frequently.
What about the Japanese who were managing these stores? Do you remember seeing them there?
Oh, yes, of course they were there, but I mean, didn't pay exceptional notice to them. They were nice people, I suppose. They wanted to sell their wares, so they had to be nice. Mm-hmm. But I never sort of saw any menace in these people. No danger. Never thought of it. I mean, at that time, I suppose I was relatively young, and these things didn't bother me.
When war broke out in Europe, what were the reactions among the Singaporeans then?
Well, of course, it was an interesting thing. It was, we never for one moment thought that the war would come to our shores. We were, of course, as the being at that time subjects of Britain, we were of course very concerned about the progress of the war. We were very distressed every time we had news of reversals and advances by the Germans and Italians. And we just had the newspapers to go by. But again, as I said, you know, being relatively young, it was more like a game of the interest was rather like in a game of football, you know, see which side is going to win, hoping that our side would win.
Were there any kind of war funds to help the war in Europe?
Were there war funds to help the war? I really cannot remember these details. You know, these are not the things. These things did not sort of make any impression on my mind at that time. That time I was really very concerned in my studies. But what was I might say that one of the things that of course did happen was that my present wife. She at that time was schooling in London, in Torquay, in England. And when war broke out there in 1939, her father brought her back with her sister and her mother to Singapore to escape the war from in Europe. So this is when I met her again because we were children, we were playing together. And this is something that did happen. and this is a personal thing, of course, to me, as a result of the war in Europe. But as far as the direct impact of the war in Europe, in my life, in my daily life, it didn't make very much of an impression on did not affect my daily life.
Well, did you help out in civil defense work like MAS?
Well, I volunteered. First of all, I joined the volunteer corps as a private. And I did some training as a volunteer. Maybe that is how it influenced me. And we went to camp. But then, later on, it was suggested to me that it would be more valuable, being a dental student, if I was in the medical auxiliary service than a fighter in the volunteer corps. So I joined the medical auxiliary service.
When was that?
This must have been, I think this was, but say, when things started heating up in this part of the world, precisely when, I cannot say, but when things started heating up and when there was fear that there would be casualties which required treatment, first aid, and so on, then people who had some basic training would be more useful doing work like that during any emergency. So this is when I switched over from the volunteer corps to the medical auxiliary service.
At that time, have the Japanese started invading this part of the world?
I think this must have been just before they started.
Yeah. Could you tell us how you went to MAS?
The medical auxiliary service was only let's put it this way: the medical and dental students formed a unit of the medical auxiliary service. And we belonged to that unit, and we were stationed at the General Hospital. And we went through a course of first aid, among other things. And also we did some ARP work. We were put on duties at night after the bombing had started. That we were put on air raid duties, and we were, but then of course I'm going ahead, aren't I, in time. But before I spoke of that, maybe you might want to ask me other questions.
Who was in charge of the unit at the General Hospital?
Professor Tratman, my professor in dentistry, in charge of the dental unit of the MAS.
So,
and I think Dr. Tay Tek Eng also.
Which area would come under the
General Hospital? We were stationed in General Hospital, working in General Hospital.
Did they have to report to any higher authorities regarding the work in the area?
I should imagine so, but to whom I really wouldn't be able to tell you.
Just before the first bombing, how frequent did you have practices or duties and training?
Oh, we had training very regularly during the week. In fact, it might have been part of our training curricula in our school, in our dental school. I think we became pretty skilled in whatever we were expected to do. in the case of emergency.
Were you given any uniform or equipment to help you?
We were issued with tin helmets and gas masks. We were issued with stirrup pumps to use in case of fire. Uniforms, I cannot remember.
Do you remember how many of you joined this unit?
Every dental student was a member. Every medical student was a member. So it worked into hundreds.
How were the attitudes of these members regarding training and practices?
Oh, I think they were quite intent on what they had to do. They took it seriously. I think as the war came closer, as it became obvious that we were likely to get involved, the members took that work seriously.
Did all of you know about the landing of the Japanese at Kota Bharu?
Oh, this came later. Of course, this, whatever we heard over the media. But of course, before that happened, there was this bombing of Singapore on December the 8th.
Could you describe for us what happened on that day?
Yes. Well, it was a normal day. I was staying in a boarding house in Oxley Road. I had been staying at the King Edward VII hostel, but because I'm a Singaporean, I had to vacate my room for students from Malaya at the FMS. And my parents were staying at the 7th mile Upper Serangoon Road, and the question of transport was a bit difficult. And especially since at that time also we had to report for night duty for the MAS on surveillance at night. Well, I mean, it was a normal day for me, normal evening for me studying, and then suddenly I woke up with this thunderous explosion, not knowing what it was, and there was silence, but one can never forget the drone of these aeroplanes, and then more explosions, and only after a while did the air raid sirens come on. We had gotten used to air raid sirens because there had been practices of air raid sirens. We knew what it meant. And my concern then was my girlfriend. She was staying in Eber Road, not far away, so I put on my clothes and raced there, and she was up with her mother and sister, and she telephoned her father and told them. And they had made a shelter under the staircase. See, my father-in-law was a very pessimistic man. I mean, and I think it was to his benefit, because by being pessimistic, he had built for himself a very substantial air raid shelter in his own home, which was put to great use. My goodness, it was. His neighbors were ridiculing him and laughing at him for doing this, you see, and saying that he was being stupid and foolish and spending money for nothing. So anyway, he of course went into the air raid shelter. I mean, he told us he's going in, and we had to go under the staircase, and which we did. And we didn't sleep, of course. This was about 4 o'clock in the morning, I suppose. And um, The next day, of course, I reported to duty early, and the casualties came in. You could see, I can remember them being brought in vaguely, although I didn't have much to do with their treatment. But the school continued. Lectures were disrupted, although we did have a few lectures, and I remember there was an examination coming along. And I remember being a bit concerned because, you know, there were no lectures, hadn't finished our syllabus, and what would happen? How could we pass this examination? It was a preclinical examination. I was not yet a clinical student. But then gradually, as the war continued, lectures ceased altogether. And we got an influx of patients from the HMS Repulse and Prince of Wales, the survivors. They had come in, some had broken their teeth, some had lost their dentures, and among other injuries. So we had to provide treatment for them. I remember making new dentures for quite a number of them. And well, this is already December, you see, and going on to January. And then the things were not going at all well in Malaya for the Allies. And we started getting a bit apprehensive in Singapore. Meanwhile, can you switch? It's
Dr. Ulis, how many of you went to report for duty to General Hospital on the day of the raid?
Oh my word, I really don't know. I cannot recall. I don't know if there were any absentees. Of course, everybody was concerned. Everybody was wondering what had happened. We'd heard all kinds of stories about people being killed in Chulia Street and elsewhere. And we saw the bodies being brought into the mortuary, because the mortuary is not too far away from the dental clinic. Of course, I mean, we were more or less in a state of shock, angry perhaps, but suddenly it dawned on us that it could happen, and it had happened to us here in Singapore, and that we'd have to face certain realities of life.
Was General Hospital affected by that first air raid?
No, I don't think General Hospital was hit at all.
Were there a lot of casualties on that first raid?
Oh yes, I think there were quite a few. We thought there were lots and lots of them because, I mean, this is our first experience of such a raid. And in actual fact, I don't think there were very large numbers of them, but large enough to make us feel shocked and awed by the whole situation, that this could have happened, and so easily, and how easily these bombers could come along without any counter attacks by the RAF. And you know, in subsequent raids, it seemed to us how ineffective the anti-aircraft firing was. So very effective. I mean, the planes just came in and came away as they pleased.
When you were there on that first day, What kind of instructions were given to all of you as MAS members? How did you help out in the hospital?
We were just standing by, waiting for casualties coming in, and in our own particular areas, like injuries to the head and neck and face and so on, and teeth. And I don't recall actually what particular work that we had. I mean, that day, I think things were in a bit of a turmoil. There was a certain degree of disorganization, disarray. People didn't know what hit them. And it took a few days before we settled down.
What about the hospital staff? How were the conditions like in the hospital?
Oh, I think the hospital staff worked, as always, very admirably. You know, they all trained, the nursing staff, the doctors and everybody else, they all dedicated, and they went around their work very well. And they, as they always had done and they always have done. And details of what went on, of course, I don't know, because we were not in the surgical units. Or, well, I can remember the mortuary is full of people all around, all relatives of the victims, crowds of people around the mortuary, and it's only a small little building, very small area around it, and it was flooded with people. So those are sort of fleeting memories I have of that particular day.
Did you know whether there was sufficient manpower on that first day, as well as subsequently throughout the war?
In the General Hospital?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think... much was wanting, but I should imagine... I cannot really answer that question, you know. I really don't know. But I don't think there was any talk of victims being allowed to die whilst nobody looked at them, that sort of a thing. I don't recall having heard any reports about such incidents.
Do you remember whether any of the dental students were asked to help out in the hospital doing first aid?
Carrying stretchers, yes. A few were asked to carry stretchers, helping out like that. They were all available.
During the whole period of the war, where were all of you stationed, and how, in what ways were you all to help?
Well, we were allocated duties, some and by rotation, and whenever we were put on night duty, which meant our being on vigil all night long, we would then take shifts to go onto the roof. Some of us slept and for a couple of hours, and so we did a rotation of that nature. We would have to watch and see whether the bombers were coming in our direction, and if so, be on the guard.